Blog Talk Radio.
Damn, priest, there's more? Nah, man. More, man?
Priest.
You still going at it?
So look at life. Where would it take us? Into the light, stay stronger, don't break up. Band together, there's strength and unity. Be stronger, live longer, it's not your eulogy. Look at life, so where would it take us? Into the light, stay stronger, don't break up. Band together, there's strength and unity. Be stronger, live longer, it's not your eulogy.
Dearly beloved, we gather here to celebrate life. Peace to be found in my wife. May I never depart, I reach deep in my heart. Pull out every foul thing I've done. But my eyes browse upon my son. Remember y'all the one, so listen. Y'all the third part, which is the best part. So when you get out in the world, the game of chess start. Remember, concentrate before you make a move. Deal with the truth in your square. Remember God is in you. So you don't have to search outside the earth. Just go inside this verse. Plant the seeds in your mind, watch it grow high as a turf. Just look around. Remember, you are the church, so
look at life. Where would it take us? Into the light, stay stronger, don't break up. Band together, strength and unity. Preach stronger, live long, not your eulogy. Look at life. Where would it take us? Into the light, stay stronger, don't break up. Band together, strength and unity. Preach stronger, live long, not your eulogy.
Victory is yours if you lead a course. Endure, make sure you know what your end is for. Remember, every seed is pure. Military wants you, the cemetery are taught to, if you let it, help you escape the hands of the medic. Perfection, in this message, you're my sons, my reflection. It is a deep lesson, if you keep stressing, it bring about a deep depression. The only answer is your friends in the weed session. Look, read a proverb a day, observe life survey. Think of my grandma and the words she'll say. Don't run down the halls, now she's joined with the Lord. Walking down the halls, blessing the all. People rise and fall, stand tall. They're gonna be the next leaders. Ecclesiastes, the words of the preacher. Hear the teacher.
Look at life, where would it take us? Into the night, stay stronger, don't break up. Band together, strength and unity. Be stronger, live long, not your eulogy. Look at life.
Well, 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 well. Welcome to the Motor City Black Age of Comics Blog Talk Radio. This is Andre Batts. Tonight we will have our special guest, Mr. Abdul Rashid, on. Very good, brother. He decided to come on and let us interview him on the Motor City Black Age of Comics Blog Talk Radio. Chronicles of the Revolutionary Nerd 8. My co-host will not be along with us tonight. That's Miss Cynthia McDonald and Kelly McAlphine. McAlphine, sorry for getting her name wrong. I'm sure she's going to punch me for it. But needless to say, they will be back on next week. Once again, like I said, we have Brother Abdul Rashid, very talented artist, creator, developer. This guy is good with concepts. He's worked with me back in the day with Dreadlocks, and even today he still works with me sometimes on character designs. And I have to say, most of his designs are off the hook. I haven't seen anything that he has done that I didn't like. Even if he give you 2-3 choices to look at, it's like you want all three of them. But needless to say, we're going to get ready to get on into Mr. Abdul Rashid. You know, I'm going to give everyone a brief on him real quick. You know, he worked at one time with New Gen Comics, the New Gen series, which was distributed by Marvel Comics. I think that was about 5 years ago. He's doing different collaborations with different cats out of New York as well as California in different genres, as well as horror, sci-fi. And he also has his own book, which is called The Eight, which is digitally pressed right now. He has so much going on, I just got to get him on the line so he can tell us a whole lot more about what he's doing, what he has done, and what he's planning on doing. I would like for everyone to hold on. Peace. Is Abdul?
Hey, Andre?
Peace, brother. How you doing?
I'm all right. I was trying to figure out the cue. How you doing?
Yeah, it's no cues here, brother. You just come right on.
Okay. All right. I'm getting used to it.
Okay. All right. Let me see. How you been, man?
I've been good. Good to hear your voice. I've been busy.
Okay.
Needless to say, doing a little traveling back and forth, so to speak, and trying to get some network going and everything to produce some really good solid properties for the people, for the fan base.
Okay. I got several questions to ask you. As far as what's going on and everything.
Yes,
you're
sir.
Like my number 8 guest here, which is good. I'm starting to get a nice little base here. A lot of people, they really reacted pretty good when, I announced that you were coming on board this week, as well as, last week I had Brother Kenji, I had John Jennings was on here, several people were on here, everybody was ready to hear him. So, of course, they want to hear what you have to say.
I'm humbled by that. Thank you.
rightfully so, rightfully so. I would like to ask you a question, though. What started you into comics, your whole interest, what got you into comics initially?
Honestly, I just like the storytelling behind it. It was like mythology. I've always been into mythologies of all different cultures and everything. And one of the things that kind of, really resonated for me was when I looked at the comics, it was that whole level of, contemporary mythology that, was very resonant to what I had, read before in terms of the Afrocentric and the Afrocentric mythology, the mythologies that we all hear about, the Olympians and Norse mythologies and Asian mythologies and so on and so forth from all cultures. And one thing that I always noticed was, that it was these individuals that were beyond the limits of, mortality, so to speak. And I like the idea that they gave you an idea of what you could be more of. I mean, no one's going to fly by themselves or no one's going to lift a mountain or anything like that, but there was always that inspiration of, being more than what you were expected to be. And so when I started looking at comics and everything, it was just something that I enjoyed, the storytelling that was very similar towards that and everything. And then I read Dark Knight Returns in 1988, and it was just like one of those type of callings, so to speak, that, I wanted to, see, images of myself also, projected on the page like that and everything, and I was like really moved by that and really, it was kind of a calling, so to speak, is that epiphany for me in terms of a way that I could tell my stories through my art and then ultimately maybe one day adapt or evolve into something else.
Right. Yeah, because I remember back in the day when you and I met, I think it was 93, or somewhere back then. It was a long time ago, at least 20 years ago. And
it was
my first senior artwork. that's been a long time, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
very
crazy.
Long time. And it's amazing how times, just fly right on by. But,
we were children.
Right. Well, you were. I was going to say, I know when I seen your artwork, I gravitated to it. It was myself, Chris Irvin, and Khalil Benel. And we saw first seen your work. We was like, man, this guy's amazing, because, just like every comic book convention, everybody goes around, showing their work to everyone,
right.
And getting opinions, because that's all it is, cause that, everything's subjective.
Yeah.
And I remember, a lot of different, you had told me back then, a lot of different people, they liked your art, but they were trying to say, different things that you weren't really ready for as far as,
right.
The mainstream is concerned. So I was more than happy to get you on board, to help develop dreadlocks, you know, because, you know, I already have my story concepts already, you know, but I knew that with your art, my storytelling, it would take it to another level, for sure. And I thought that you were going to be amazing even back then. You know, and what was your experience, you know, back then with dealing with the different creators that were already in existence at that time when you were first trying to get on?
Well, you know, it was kind of, you know, it's just like any entertainment entity, you know, and this, which is something I didn't really appreciate. But, you know, everybody has a perception on what you should be drawing. And or how you should be drawing it, and or you want to copy the same thing. You know, around that time frame, of course, Image had just really, you know, come out, and Milestone had, you know, was making its tread, and you know, you had this idea of, you know, a lot of the characters at that time were these really massively built, over the top, kind of like the Rob Liefeld type of, you know, everybody having these hulking arms and. You know, the women having to have like the 2-inch waist and so on and so forth.
And
breasts that were like, you know, bigger than, you know, like the guy's pecs, basically. It was just ridiculous.
Right.
And I wanted something that where the characters had more realistic. Ironically enough, it's funny because I see more realism in terms of like the depiction of body types now in the illustrations of today. But, you know, at that particular point in time, I was thinking, you know, like not, you know, like it doesn't make, I'm a martial artist, so as you know, and like for me, you know, like it didn't make much sense to have like these guys built like Arnold Schwarzenegger doing all these agility type of things,
right.
Even if you're like super, you know, Superman or superhuman or what have you and everything, just your whole body density is going to restrict you from doing this, that, and the other. So it had to be a sense of realism. And so when I drew that, it was kind of rejected. You know, when I depicted characters that looked more realistically built in order to do what they could do, I would, you know, it would be rejected because they look
right.
at me and go like, well, how come, you know, he's not, you know, 5'10" and 800 pounds of muscle being able to run 2 seconds, you know, like 800 miles in 2 seconds. I was like, because it doesn't make sense. Even in your fantasy, there has to be some sense of grounding. And, you know, I had a crap load of rejection letters from Marvel and DC, you know, and for all intents and purposes, it's kind of discouraging. And so, especially if you don't know any better, you know, it's very discouraging. And it just got to a point for me where, like, I remember there was a period of time where I was just like, maybe I just focus on fine art, and which I still do for my fine art. But the thing was that, like, you know, I got to a point where I wanted to prove something, basically, you know, like to, despite the naysayers. So, you know, and I still have all those rejection letters and everything. I collected about like 500 or something like that because I sent.
You have them framed?
Submissions after submissions on. You said what?
Are they framed?
The first one, yeah. The first one is.
Because you always look at rejection as a form of motivation myself.
I'm inspired. I was inspired, you know, like, and fortunately enough for me, and it was I got strength from everything, but, you know, my experiences were not necessarily the best if you look at it from, like, oh, well, you didn't get in. The thing was is that, like, you know, there was a certain thing that they were looking for, and I was not necessarily fitting that bill when it came down to that. I wanted something that looked more grounded with our superheroes, and then I wanted something also that was I was swaying towards, you know, a depiction of the society we live in. You know, like I was like, where are characters look like me? Where are characters look like some of my Asian friends and my Latino friends and Middle Eastern friends and so on and so forth? And weren't not enough of those things. So it was a little discouraging, but I knew that if I stuck to my guns and everything, people would, you know, the ideology would catch up. You know, like not to say that there weren't other people thinking like me. There are a lot of people that are thinking like me.
Right.
You, for example, you're one of those individuals. And I think that now people are starting to catch up with that way of conceptual thinking. But, you know, if you were like, you know, I was in my teens and early 20s. And so, like, for me, that was like one of those type of things that was just like, you know, if I didn't have the strength and the grounding and the support network, which at that particular point in time, I gave a lot of kudos to my father, I would have just, you know, just said, screw it, and called it a day.
Right, yeah, I'm sure, because like you said, back then, it was really whitewashed as far as the industry is concerned. And even
definitely.
Even today, you kind of, you know, even though we're starting to become more involved in the sense of our images inside of their comic mm-hmm. books, you know, as far as them changing the colors of their different characters, you know, changing them from what they were into being black now. They're doing that now, I guess, to appease a lot of us, just to get more viewership in the sense of, you know, just in general.
Well, it's funny you should say that.
You know, to me personally, I don't think that that really fits the bill of making that change.
Not at all.
What do you
yeah,
think
it's
about
funny
that?
You should say that. I totally agree with you on that. You know, I you know, with what they did with Captain America and what they're doing with Captain America currently, but as we know, as we see right now, with switching back into Steve Rogers and, you know, like in the respective Spider-Man situation where you have the ultimate Spider-Man and,
right.
you know, here's the thing, you know, like, or like in the Marvel, in the DC universe where you look at, you know, Batwing and everything, you bring in, you know, Lucius Fox's kid and to fit a role. Here's the thing, you know, these characters, especially like, you know, when they, the new Captain America, I really want to hit on that. When you can't do something, you can't say this is a new character and everything for all intents and purposes when, quite honestly, you know, the old character is going to come back. All you're doing is you're putting a temporary dynamic to thing. You know, it really strengthen the original character, strengthen, you know, Falcon, you know, or, you know, this the concept of the, you know, the idea of having these characters of color on the taking up on the mantle that was established by their Eurocentric counterpart, you know, because, you know, everybody recognizes these mantles with that particular character. You're never going to have Captain America without Steve Rogers. You're not.
Right.
You know, no matter how hard you try to, you know, like say this is the new and not, no, you can't do that and everything. The character is established. It's like trying to replace Batman. There's been a number of characters that have come to fill the Batman mantle and so to speak and everything, but you still have Bruce Wayne in the mix of it in one form or another. You can't have Batman without Bruce Wayne. You can't have Captain America without Steve Rogers. And my whole thing is about like with these, you know, chocolate, you know, dip. Superhero
mm-hmm.
perception, which is basically what they are. They're temporary. Mm-hmm. You know, like you have some great characters here, enrich and empower these characters. With my Marvel side, you have Blade. It's funny because, you know, the success of Deadpool, for example, you know, they say, oh, you know, Deadpool is making, breaking all these records. And don't get me wrong, I'm looking forward to actually seeing it myself. I'm going to go see it. But I'm looking forward to seeing it, quite honestly. You know, I want to see this translation and whatnot. Here's the funny part. They totally forget the fact that, like, the movie that put Marvel's, or they don't recognize it. I'm sure Marvel recognizes it. But, you know, the thing is that, like, Blade was the thing that gave Marvel some kudos, that gave Marvel movies some accreditation. Blade was that first the Marvel movie that really put them back, you know, in the footing to compete with what the Batman juggernaut that was going on at that time for DC, you know, in cinema.
And I agree with that.
Go ahead.
I agree with that. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. Because right now on social media, that's the big thing that's being talked about right now is, you know, everyone talking about Deadpool being the first R-rated movie that just killed the box office or whatever.
Right.
I was going to kill the box office due to the fact that it was a Marvel product anyway. But for it being the first R-rated movie, you know, that's something that that the mainstream media is out there. They're actually putting that out there. And we all know back in the early 2000s or whatever, when Blade came out. Oh, yeah, 98, when Blade came out. 98. It was first, you know, it's like the first black superhero that we actually were familiar with that was on the big screen. It made, you know, and he wasn't really, you know, a mainstream character of the group.
Well, that was
Night,
the thing.
Nightwalkers.
It was like, right. It was the you're right, the Night Stalkers. Or the,
no,
yeah,
Night Stalkers. Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And they tried to wash him up when they brought the Night Stalkers into the third installment of Blade. Remember,
which
they tried to concentrate more.
Yep, that was the weakest of the trilogy.
It was the weakest one of the three.
Yep.
And they tried to concentrate more on the Night Stalkers, and it was like, what the heck are they doing here? Needless to say,
which is that sixth degree of the dynamic and everything. Ryan Reynolds played Hannibal King in that
right.
movie, ironically enough, in that third, which, you know, you look at it like, you know, almost, you know, 18 years later, here you go, you know, he's in like the number one movie in the country right now. And,
right.
you know, with that similar formula. But the thing is that, you know, when we're creating characters, and this is one of the reasons why, like, a lot of people ask me, like, why am I doing what I'm doing in terms of, you know, these characters and these concepts and these titles and everything. You know, when I'm doing the studio for is not just, you know, just to be out there and get product out there and blah, blah, blah and everything like that. That's part of it. But the thing is that I wanted to get an opportunity to show fresh, new intellectual concepts out there and everything that weren't going to be I'm unapologetic about it. You know, I'm a creator of color, and there are going to be characters that are Afrocentric descent, that are going to be Middle Eastern descent, Asian descent, Eurocentric descent, and so on and so forth. It's a depiction of the society you live in. You know, otherwise,
right.
if I did the same thing, like if I created every character to be one demographic, then for me, I know I would be doing similar to
what
my Eurocentric counterparts have done in terms of not showing this diversity and this beautiful diversity that we live in terms of our society, our community. I mean, like,
right.
it's imperative that we don't, you know, follow that same path and everything, and we continue to be expansive thinkers.
No, I agree with that one.
Smarter.
They're very smart, especially
with the younger
audience.
Oh, most definitely.
The younger audience, you know, they're basically coming up on manga, you know, like how we came up on, you know, Shaw Brothers, you know, the live-action
mm-hmm.
martial arts. And now
right,
they're
exactly.
coming up on manga, which is basically kind of the same thing in the sense of, you know, something that we're getting from overseas, over from the you
right.
know the Asian markets or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and is being introduced to the youth that are reading books now. And I know you're into martial arts and things of that nature. Tell me more about how that influenced, you know, your artwork. As a matter of fact, you know, before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, the eight and some of the stories that you actually are putting out right now? Right now, I know you have one on a digital format, right? Peep Gang Comics.
We have a few, actually. We have a couple
okay.
that are out, and we're gonna have a few more actually launching in the next couple months. The eight actually is our proverbial superhero team. The Eight is basically a group of they're part of an immortal faction. Basically, just to, you know, give a quick brief on it, what happens is that this is like maybe, you know, time for all intents and purposes is kind of like a non-constant for angels, and so this could be like, you know, this is like thousands and thousands and, you know, millennia before, you know, right after the fall, the great war and everything that created hell, you know, the war in heaven that created hell, basically. And God sends angels down to heaven, I mean, to earth, basically, because now earth is, you know, has manifested and man is populated.
I hope
there
ain't no good Christians going to listen to this because they're going to be pissed at you hearing this now.
They might be a little mad at me, yeah. But the thing is what happens is that God sends angels to earth to teach man, to kind of enlighten them to, like, what you have around you. what ultimately happens is that man, not understanding what's in front of them, starts to worship these angels as gods.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as these angels try to deter them from worshiping them, man insists on doing it and everything. So one of these angels decides, whose name is Set, one of these angels is like, you know, like, what's the point in trying to, you know, teach these things, you know, like, you know, let's Lucifer was right, Satan was right, you know, like, let's rule over them. I mean, this makes no sense. And so Ra, who is the leader of this particular group of angels, is ordered to punish Set. So he basically, you know, like, he incarcerates him, so to speak, in the sarcophagus, this gold sarcophagus, and buries him so that the things that he wanted to rule over could walk over him. Now, in the prior to doing this, Set has now created, has bestowed upon some of the most vile humans an angelic power, making them all but, you know, supernatural, you know, like, they're supernatural, but, you know, just they're really powerful. So in order to counter this, because angels can't kill humans, Ra creates, you know, helps create some good humans. And so this battle between immortals takes place. Now, thousands and thousands of years later, this group of good immortals has factions. And this particular story centers around eight of these heroes, part of this good faction, who's trying to figure out who's murdering the good immortals as the evil immortals start to continue to rise because of this millennia-long war and everything. So it's that proverbial good versus evil thing and whatnot, and I do spotlight Afrocentric characters in this. And it kind of plays on mythology and theology and, you know, what this and that and so on and so forth and everything. And, you know, when people read it, they see that it's really high-pitched action, it's very action-paced and so on and so forth. But the thing is that I think people really, you know, will resonate to it and everything. And then number two is about to come out in a couple months, and I think people are really going to enjoy that.
Now, you know, you're talking to a brother that's quite familiar with the Kemetic theology or Kemetic mysticism.
I figured you'd appreciate it.
of the gods or whatever.
Right.
You know, I noticed that you said Set, which was created by Lucifer, or they were following the ways of Lucifer, or at least he was, whatever, and Ra being basically created from, I guess, one of the, created from God or whatever.
Not exactly. The way Set is, actually, Set ultimately, my idea was that angels, you know, because I see that a lot of times people do these interpretations of angels on film and in media, and angels don't understand what love is, and they don't understand what anger is, and so on and so forth. And I had to stop and think, like, you know, emotions had to, they couldn't have just started with man, if you stop and think about it, you know, if anything, because, you know, angels are probably over-the-top emotional. Because, you know, in Satan's case, it was jealousy that made
what
his undoing. That would
have,
you know, so,
had been the case. But we,
yeah, exactly.
But, you know, my understanding, you know, is, you know, that book that really created the Lucifer or Satan, as we call it, would be the greatest book ever written, or the greatest comic ever written. We'll just put it like that. You know, that's
right.
You know, it's the greatest comic book ever written. You know,
no, I agree.
When you think about some of the stories that we write, include myself, yourself, and most comic book artists or creators, even Stan Lee or whatever, a lot of the stories, they stem kind of like out of the Bible in one sense. You know, and we also get into the mythologies of different cultures as well. We add it into our storylines or whatever.
One thing I wanted to do was, touch on, because, you know, when you talk about, I'm Muslim, as you know.
Right.
And one of the things that, you know, like, I wanted to kind of, you know, play with was the fact that, you know, not so much dealing with a certain specific theology or reference, but you kind of touch on elements that would have, you know, had triggered the evolution or the clarity or the generation of that particular theology. But one of the things that I wanted to, you know, touching back on that whole emotional thing, it wasn't so much that I wanted to make Set anything like, you know, Satan or Ra, like, like this, you know, really, really good, you know, guy or whatever. The thing was is that I wanted to play with the emotional Set and as the emotional side of it. And Set, just like any other warrior archangel, is just as emotional. But what I wanted to do was explain where insanity came from, so to speak, in this story.
I wanted to say,
and basically as this story veers on, it will touch on where insanity was born. And I've often said that, like, man did not generate, you know, wasn't the first to encounter love. Man wasn't the first to encounter hate and so on and so
right.
forth.
It had to
it had to come from somewhere else, basically. And we're kind
That's
of like that
concept.
Byproduct of it. And like with Seth,
That's why we
I
understand
said, like,
these,
let me,
why we understand
right.
these different emotions and understand
right,
what
exactly.
they are. Because actually, hate could be love. We don't know. It's a thin
right,
line.
Exactly.
Basically,
yeah,
right?
You don't know. Yeah, it's a thin line. And it's a thin line. And what I played with was the fact that, like, what if insanity was one of those type of things that were spurned by an angel? And I played with that concept of insanity being born with Set. Because ultimately, his goal was to, like, say, like, look, he's wrong, everybody's wrong. Screw it. Let's just destroy everything.
Right. No, that's a good concept. Because no
right.
one knows. I got you. That makes a lot of
right.
sense. So that's deep. Okay, now I was going to ask you, do you feel that when you first got into, like, to say, doing your artwork or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I would say that the art really had chosen you in the sense of, you know, that was your destiny or whatever. But as far as
mm-hmm.
Story writing goes, what really made you really get into story writing? Because I know you used to have some concepts here and there back in the day, but you never really pursued them. What made you really pursue
right.
it this go round?
Well, after you get a certain number of, you know, rejections, so to speak, and then you have the opportunity to work with a group of people and everything, and you get your hands kind of like you get your feet wet with a little writing and helping to make a concept better or helping to enrich a concept and everything with a reinterpretation of what was already established, you kind of realize that, like, you know, I'm not half bad with this. I was working on a project and everything and for an independent company. And I started, you know, reading through the script. And when I was reading through it, I realized that, you have these characters saying things that don't make any sense. You have these, you know, there's too much levity here. You know, like, you want this particular story to have some sense of severity to it and the sense of urgency, and you got this tongue-in-cheek dialogue going on here. You know, you have there's a thing of, like, dialogue and then comic book talk. And there's sometimes where you have these people that draw and that write these stories, and 30 years ago that would have probably passed. But, you know, like, you know, you have to just talk, you know, say what these people really say in real life situations. But that's definitely what was not in that particular script. So, like I said, look, give me a crack at it. Let me rewrite this. And so I rewrote, like, you know, two parts of this, you know, of this story, and of the 6-issue miniseries, and I was like, you know, or was it 5? I think it was 5. And then I wrote the entire, you know, like a prequel to it, and I was like, I wanted to give some edge to it, give some, you know, urgency, some sense of severity to it. And then I realized, you know, if I can do that for their stuff and everything, why the hell am I not doing it for mine? So that's when I decided to go ahead and put my hands in terms of creating scripts and writing this and so on and so forth and everything, because I wanted to write, not only draw the images that I want to do, but put them in a certain presentation that you won't see them normally do. You know, like, maybe the bad guy will win.
Which they should win.
It shouldn't be a good guy winning every single time. there are some people will be, there are characters in my stories that I think, to create sense of urgency, sometimes people keep their ongoing characters, their favorite cast members. One writer I really enjoy his work on is Kirkman, for Walking Dead. And because when I was, when you get vested into a character, you're like, well, they'll never kill him. And he kills off some really beloved characters, throughout and everything. Like, this season of Walking Dead is starting to come up to, characters that people are saying, they can't kill him. And I'm like, well, keep in mind, these characters have been dead for a decade. Technically.
Right. Like, some of them weren't even on the show. You look at that guy, Durrell.
Right.
He wasn't even in the book.
Right,
he wasn't even
on the show. He was created. He was created specifically for the show. So, but they're going to come across some characters that they've been enjoying, and they're about to be dead pretty quick. But the situation is that, I wanted to, write and, to in order to make these stories a little bit more realistic, I thought it was important to write stories where the bad guy occasionally won. And not just this one story, but, occasionally won. Like, in real life, sometimes, a lot of times you see really good people get the short end of the stick, and you're kind of like, what the hell? That guy or that lady, they're good people. Why is the bad guy winning? And unfortunately, that's because they turn right when they should have turned left, unfortunately. And so those are the type of stories that I wanted to have so that, it would show more of a sense of reality. And it's just like they just so happen to have superpowers. They just so happen to have these abilities. But that doesn't mean that life is going to be fair. And I thought it was important to write stories like that because, it does teach that proverbial, when you fall, you got to, get back up. I mean, because, I'm going to tell you, it's no big secret. We've had to work even to get to this point to where you and I have this type of platform to be able to do this. But this is taking work.
It's still
a crap load of work to do. It's still a crap load of work to do.
It's a whole lot of work. I think I'll be 90 years old by the time I'm where I want to be.
and that's that thing. But the thing is that we have to stay hungry to get to that point.
Yeah.
Say, even if we can only enjoy it for you get the 90 and you enjoy it for 5 years, at least you have 5 years
exactly
to enjoy all the work.
You're right, and that's something that in dealing with the youth or whatever, or kids, whenever I'm at a venue where, I may be speaking or I'm talking to kids or whatever, and I know you do the same thing, you like to let them know to stay true to their craft. And you do understand that, the gratification is not going to come overnight. And if you truly love this, you'll be doing it until you're no longer here because it's just something that's in you. And that's kind of like, it goes into that question that I was asking you about the writing, and as far as the art is concerned, that's something that's already in you, and I just want to know, by being in you, obviously you're going to stick to it, to the end of days, that goes without saying, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been real fortunate in the fact that, for me, certain things have started to fall into place. I also had to learn that, I couldn't change on my ethics when it came down to, as I was getting further and further to a point, I had to realize the fact that as an artist, I love my craft and I love what I'm doing and everything. But then I also, there were many times I've been taken advantage of because I am that definition of the artist, I love my work. I love my craft. And then there are people who I have worked with over the years who have taken advantage of my craft and everything, and subsequently I got the short end of the stick from, compensationally. But those are learning experiences for me. I've learned that, and since that period of time, I've learned that, okay, if I'm going to do X, Y, Z, then, you need to come up with, at least some level of investment into it, so I know you're vested into my craft, so that I know that you're going to, be vested into it. And a lot of times, people say money, it's not all about the money. No, it's not all about the money. But when somebody is asking you to do something, and they put in a physical investment into it, then they're definitely more so invested than your average person. And so, and that generates a level of respect because they respect the craft from that. And then you want to make sure that, like, they get the best quality from it. But then you come across also other individuals who you're, who you know are vested, just as equally vested into it as you are. And so they've invested that level of sweat equity and everything into it that is equal to yours. And so they're right along with you. You know, talking about that, you know, working with individuals like yourself, I've been fortunate enough to work with other creative individuals like Dion Floyd. I'm doing a project with him, a collaborative effort with him with Immortal Kiss, with Aquarius Studios. Yeah, I mean, like, it just he's an amazing guy. And I've been fortunate enough to work with Kevin Giroux, who was the creator of the Underworld series, finishing you know, we're doing I'm working on getting that. I got to get these pages done for him, too, with this project called Horoscope.
I know you were talking about that a while back.
Yeah, and really good guy. And then also, I've been real fortunate to be working with Terry Crews, who I've known for many years.
I see. That must have been the California hookup is with Terry Crews, right?
Yeah. That's why I was out in California working with him. And he's, you know, just as much, you know, he's always been kind of like that big brother guy for me because, you know, he's always been there for, you know, I met him when I was 12. And so, you know, like, we've known each other for a long time. And, you know, like he was a senior in high school when I was in the eighth grade. And, you know, like I've always, you know, looked up to what he was doing at that time. And so obviously he's done a few things, you know, he's got,
I've always felt that you were being taken advantage of when it came to certain individuals that you were working for. I remember that time in, when I was out in New York, and that guy came up to me about one of the characters that you had designed for me. I forget which character it was. And he was talking about how the character looked like his and all this kind of stuff. You remember that?
I do remember that.
It was a while ago, but I'm like, what's wrong with this guy?
That was a
while
ago.
But he's a prime example of that, what you're talking about. And it's good. I know you can't really speak on what you're doing with Terry Crews in the sense of, you know, the confidentiality and everything. But it's good to know that that's who you're working with.
Yeah, I can say the title now because, like, fortunately he went on ahead and, you know, he was, when I was out in California at the Stanley's Kamikaze in L.A. on Halloween weekend, he took some time out to actually speak on a panel about his project. It's called Notorium. It's basically a merger of science fiction, action, adventure, and everything, and hip-hop. And you have this blend of the two. That actually is a really synonymous. Comics and hip hop have had a relationship for years, years. And you know, you look at, you know, what, you know, Wu-Tang has done over the years, and you look at, you know, like other groups that have created their comics and everything. And DMC has a comic book even now, and a couple other artists who have comics and everything. And you know, you want to make sure that you're also collaborating with, you know, right people as well. And the thing is that, you know, when you get it and everything, you get fully vested into it. And Terry, you know, he gets it, you know, because the blend between hip-hop and comics is so good and synergy, because they can lay a soundtrack, for, you know, hands down. And that's one of the things, you know, when you work with people who are also artists like that and everything, who think out of the box and paradigm breakers, it's an enjoyable experience. And so when we start, when we launch that series this summer, it's going to be a very exciting property. And I think that people are going to really, really enjoy both the visual element to it and also some of the audio elements to it, because I want to put a little levels of spin into it and everything that I think people are going to be really surprised by in terms of what we're going to, you know, put with it. And, you know, Terry, too, probably. hope he is.
Right.
The goal is to really, you know, everybody, including him, in terms of what we generate. Now, I'm really pleased with some of the earlier it was some of the earlier layouts and illustrations and everything, especially the battle scene.
Oh, okay. So what's the future for AHR Visions?
Right now, we're going to we're prepping. Right, AHR Visions is really the foundation of is the starting point for a transmedia studio. You know, I got the idea and everything from working with other entities that have a transmedia concept and everything when it comes to the storytelling. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I wanted to do, and you see a lot of studios doing levels of that now, where their TV, like Marvel has their TV and their movies that are kind of interconnected. What I wanted to do was create a transmedia format where the comics, the movies, the animation, video games, all those things are connected in one aspect or another to each story. So, so that like you can get separately and enjoy it separately, but if you want to get the full concept of the story, you got to invest in everything, which I think people really enjoy. And so I have a number of titles that have shared universe. That's The Eight, Black Rose, which is kind of like our studio's Batman, F character, Scorn, who is our female-led, one of our female-led comics, Pharaoh and Dynamic, which are also female-led comics and everything that I think people will find very surprising. We have our group of science fiction lines, which with Aya, Rebirth, Bleed, Six Swords, War, and I think those are the main six. The collaborative effort that I'm doing with Deion Floyd, and then our celebrity properties, which are with Terry Crews for Notorium, and then Kevin Giroux with for Horoscope. So we have a number of titles, but I think as people see more and more and more of them, you know, we launch them continuously and everything, get ready for the respective shows and events that will be coming up. We're doing Kamikaze again this year. I may be going to Dragon Con and New York Comic Con again and making a revisit. And then I'm focusing on, my mind is already into 2017 for New York, for San Diego, for Comic Con International. But we're going to do, like, at least one to two major shows and then keep on adding a major show each year to kind of, like, expand. But I'm not going to go to every single show because, right. You know, I think you need to pick and choose and be selective with, you know, what you do it and when you do it and how you do it and everything to keep the audience wanting more. But, you know, I want people to see us all over the place where we become a staple and a nice brand.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I hope I can see you at the Motor City Black Age of Comics this year.
You know, my goal is to actually, you know, if anything, definitely come down and make a visit. And, you know, because, like, I want to do something with a couple of people. I think there's a lot of stuff that, especially as creators of color, I want us to see us all work together. Mm-hmm. I want us to see us all continue to strive. I think that's one thing we can learn from our counterparts is that, you know, there's got to be a sense of community. And, you know, so, like, if I'm at one, then you can expect me at another. And, you know, like, it, because I want to show that sense of, you know, community and everything. Because, right. You know, there's a lot of people that you know, that I know, and vice versa. And I love the idea that, like, when we all get together, we can sit down, break bread, you know, enjoy each other's time, laugh a little bit, because we only see each other maybe once a year to really sit down and talk, you know, if we're lucky. So because we were so busy and everything, we've evolved a lot over the past 20-some-odd years.
Oh, yeah,
and so,
I know. I'm going out to New Jersey myself, you know, just spread that dreadlock love out at the Kemp Fest.
Oh, yeah.
Which is going to be in New Jersey this coming Saturday. I'm hoping to see a lot of my East Coast family out there. And,
most definitely.
The brothers, you know, this is the second year for it, and I am looking forward to getting out there. I got a fractured toe and all, but the doctors say it's okay for me to travel right now. So,
oh, man. Whoa,
I'm good.
Yeah,
brother. Hey, but listen, it looks like I
be
got
careful,
a
young
collar.
Man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you know, my toe just wasn't made for hitting up against a steel kickstand.
Yeah.
Surviving, it wasn't made for that. I guess I found out the hard way.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
It looks like we got a caller on the line right now, and I'm going to see if this person wants to ask any questions or anything of that nature. Hold on for a minute. We'll see what we can do here. Caller, you have a question?
Yes, I would have a question for Abdullah.
Hold on for a minute. You got a question for Abdullah?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay, go ahead. What's your question?
You was talking about soundtracks and music for your comics. I would like to know what type of music and soundtracks you're going to have and what type of artist.
Let me see. Right now, like, for example, I work with a couple of various different artists who, you know, our music's I sample and everything. One of the things, I love local talent. That's one of the things. I love independent mainstream. I love independent talent. You know, so like it depends on the title. Like for example, with Scorn, there's that very epic and kind of almost symphonic type of music that I'm looking for. With Notorium, you know, I have the luxury of being having access to certain, you know, more well-established, well-known artists and everything that, you know, will deal and merge the levels of orchestral and hip-hop and have a nice little, you know, merger of those two particular hybrids, those lovely compositional music concepts. It's got to be something very epic. I'm classically trained in terms of percussion. But I also am trained in jazz. I love my hip hop. I think that it depends really much on the actual title. So, like, and one of the things is that, particularly with some of the original conceptual titles that I have, I'm looking for individuals with out of the box thinking. So, like, when you look at something like The Eight and everything, you know, think Hans Zimmer, but think, see if you can, like, merge a little Coltrane into it and everything. What can you do to really, you know, these musics that may sound so far apart, do you have the expansive mindset to see where the connectivity is and, like, really expound on that and really make something that's unique and specific?
I can see
for
the
that,
eight with something
that,
like the metal rap, like Public Enemy doing right now.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, right, exactly, something like that. What was Ice-T's band? Body Count. They have that nice hardcore type of thing. But even with, you know, aspects of The Eight and everything with that relationship, you know, you can see, you know, in that, or you could see something, you know, really, you know, out of the top Matrix-y type of thing and everything. I mean, it depends really on the title and the vibe that we're trying to really, I mean, like, I want something that's really going to move people.
Any particular artist that you're showcasing?
I'm sorry, sir?
Is there any particular artist that you're showcasing?
Let me see. I can't necessarily, you know, like right now, actually, I'm working with a local artist. His name is David Kretz. I'm working, you know, like trying to, you know, I'm working with him right now. He's in Mansfield, Ohio. And I'm working with him right now to get some ideas to see where we can go with one of the projects that we're doing right now. As far as other artists, right now I'm doing a search as well. Now, as far as Notorium goes, there's a couple of more, I can't name them, but there's a couple of more well-known artists and everything that are getting attached to the property and everything, which I'm very excited about. And so as we get ready to get Notorium together and everything for presentation, I think a lot of people are going to enjoy the soundtrack to that and be surprised at, you know, some of the people that we have attached to it or you know, that and who, so to speak. They're going to enjoy the soundtrack about it. And then, of course, with the other titles, I'm always looking to, you know, looking for sound, looking for artists who have that musical vision and everything that will complement the story itself.
Oh, okay, I see. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, if, you know, like if you know artists and everything like that, if you know some musicians who you think, you know, have some, you know, could fit. I mean, because if you visit our website, you'll see some of the visual samples that we have in terms of,
give them,
you know,
your
the
website, because we give them your website, because we're getting down to the last 5 minutes, so everybody's going to need to know your website.
The website is www.ahrvisions.com. That's www.ahrvisions.com. And you'll see some of the titles and everything that we have. I mean, we're about to tweak some of the other properties because there are some titles that we're about to, unfortunately, we're not going to actually have in the lineup and everything, but we're kind of refining some things. And but I think people are really going to be very happy with the list that we will be having and the properties and titles that we will be premiering very soon.
Cool. Thanks for the call, caller.
Thank you.
Where are you calling from, caller?
I'm calling from Toledo, Ohio.
Toledo, oh, that's nowhere from here. Okay.
I'm in Cleveland.
Thanks for the call. You're right in the Midwest, right in the range of things. Then you know what I mean.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm gonna put you on hold, caller.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. Listen, Abdul, we're getting down to our last 3 minutes of the call, the conversation, and the interview, and I appreciate you making that effort and being able to call in for the interview. We need to set up another time. We're not going to do it, obviously, right now, because there's still a lot more that, you know, I would like to talk to you about, and my other co-hosts, I'm sure they will have a lot to talk to you about as well.
We got a
part two with a couple of you guys, and I just want to let the fan base know that next week we will have Brother Man Creators on board. It's Brother Dawood Ayimbele and Brother Guy Sims will be on board next week. And I'm looking forward to that. That's one of my influences. I'm sure that was one of yours as well, Abdul.
Oh yeah, I'm quiet. I'm letting you present. But yeah, brother. Oh my goodness, I'm amazing. Got to, because then I found really
like
revolutionary geeky.
hey, that's what we are though. We the revolutionary
nerds. Exactly, man. I'll be all that. I embrace my nerdy and geekiness and everything, and I'll put a fist up in a second. But yeah, brother, man, that was definitely one of my influences to say, like, I wanted to put something on paper that looks like me.
Yeah, I think
get out, best trained, best educated, best equipped.
Chronicles of the Revolutionary Nerd, and we will see you next week. Thanks for the interview, Abdul. Peace, brother.
Take care, bro. Peace.
Power. We got to fight the power that beats. As the rhythm's designed to bounce with time.